Hello and welcome to Healing from Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love, which shares stories that illuminate the reality of life in all aspects and ways to use healing energies, intuition, and our higher selves to create a healthy, prosperous life for ourselves and others. And today I am delighted to welcome Daniel Pinchbeck, author of How Soon Is Now, who will show us how the ecological crisis we are experiencing can provide an opportunity for a rapid evolution of human society on all levels. Hello, Daniel, and thank you for joining us today on Healing from Within.
Thank you for having me.
Daniel, as listeners of the show over time have come to expect, my guests and I share intimate stories and insights into the hopes of once again remembering who we are as spiritual beings having a physical life, with the hopes of balancing the best of our connections to each other and our physical world in the hopes of creating health, prosperity, balance, compassion, love, and a unified humanity and world. In today's episode of Healing from Within, Daniel Pinchbeck, who is also the author of Breathing Open the Head and Notes from the Edge Times, along with other books, covers everything from energy and agriculture, politics, media, and ideology in order to understand the nature of the soul and the future of our current world. Daniel, I always love to ask my guests to think back to their childhood and remember a person, a place, an event, a value, a goal, something that may have shown them or others the path or values and lifestyle they would pursue as an adult. For I believe nothing's random, and we begin with our mission at the very beginning within us. Yeah.
Okay, I grew up in New York City in Manhattan, and my parents were artists. My father was an abstract painter. My mother was a novelist and a book editor. And so I was often in, you know, my early life surrounded by their friends, by artists and writers, including some of the writers of the Beat Generation, like Allen Ginsberg, and the radical activist Abby Hoffman. So they definitely made a strong impression on me. They seemed people who were very awake and very present and had great senses of humor.
Right. And great imagination. Right? Imagination,
sure,
is the key to climbing into the spiritual realms and downloading inspiration. So that's wonderful. So many of us are trying right now, at the present time, to understand how our world has gotten to be on the brink of an ecological mega crisis and how we must begin to think of ways to change what is obvious to so many of us at this time in our national and world history. This is not fantasy, but true. Tell us of this.
The book How Soon Is Now looks at what's happening ecologically and argues that we are facing an extinction crisis, potentially for ourselves as a species. And I look at that as a possible, from a positive perspective, as a kind of initiation, a rite of passage, an opportunity for us to awaken and change the focus of our civilization. But just recently, the International Panel for Climate Change at the UN, just a few weeks ago, issued a new report, which is even more kind of dire, basically saying that unless we really radically redirect the productive capacities of our society, we're going to be seeing kind of a whole collapse of the systems by 2040, if not earlier, with a 2.7 Fahrenheit warmer climate by that time.
Yeah. All the weather changes we're observing are not going to go away. So we need to find ways to protect as many of the countries and people as we can, and to alleviate, if possible, some of the conditions that are causing a lot of these problems. And to do that, You mentioned very seriously, and I'm in line with you on this, we have to work cooperatively, not so competitively. It can't be a man or dog eat dog mentality that we're dealing with, because that's what's gotten us into the mess we're in now. So while people thought we were having such a utopia with technology and social media, actually what we're having is a decline in human services and in the way people deal with each other in a compassionate way, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's complicated. I mean, in some ways, for many people on Earth, this is like the best time ever. People who are, in the middle class or the elite, so have like an incredible lifestyle. You're able to travel the world and sample the different cultures of the world and
Yeah,
the
but there's so
food and,
much. Yes, there's so much misery for those on the margins, the victims of famine and war and genocide right here in our own country. There's so much
Yeah,
illness and
definitely.
poverty and disease. So, yes, all right. So, yes, some are doing better than others. But the thing is that it should be a world where we all can do better. I think you believe in that, and I certainly do. So tell us about the philosopher Ken Wilber and his model called spiral dynamics. I found that quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I just touch on Ken Wilber's work in the book. I mean, he looks at kind of this idea that there is an evolution of consciousness happening, and he borrows a model that was developed by some other people called spiral dynamics, where you kind of see that as consciousness evolves, it becomes more aware of kind of larger wholes. So it goes from self-interest to family interest to tribal interest to national interest and ultimately like planetary interest.
Yeah, so we go
And at each
past,
state,
yeah, we go past hierarchies and absolutes, and we believe in equal rights for all, right? So that's the transition that comes from that type of spiral dynamic. Is that so?
yeah, exactly. He also, I mean, I just wrote a little about him in the book, but he also looks at how maybe we've, some of the aspects of our where we're at now in terms of consciousness have caused kind of a collapse, back. Like a lot of people who are in the spiritual or New Age worlds, you can almost believe anything once you've rejected the mainstream narrative, and that's problematic also. So yeah,
Well,
so he argues, that we have to learn to become, kind of more discerning, and that's kind of what I've tried to do in my books. I mean, you mentioned How Soon Is Now, but the earlier books include Breaking Open the Head, that was about psychedelic shamanism, and I was visiting, different tribal cultures around the world, and then the other book was called 2012, Return of Quetzalcoatl, that was looking at the prophecies of all these indigenous and traditional cultures.
right. And they do hold some substantial truths because they interact with the universe in a way much like intuitives do. And we all have this capacity, but not everyone is interested in developing it. But let's go on to you say you finished writing How Soon Is Now in the months before Donald Trump won the U.S. election. Can you tell us how, while you found Trump's rise to power shocking, it was not surprising to you. Neither was it to me. So tell us something about that.
I don't know. Yeah, it just has felt for a long time that there were sort of undercurrents in American life that we hadn't really dealt with, and
Absolutely.
it feels like karmic kind of like comeuppance in a way. I mean, our country has, while we have this ideology of like freedom and democracy, we also supported a lot of dictators around the world. Overthrew democratically elected left-wing governments and so on. So, we've had our fingers in a lot of nasty pies. And in a weird way, this whole situation feels like some of our own karma coming back to us. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a very extraordinary circumstance. I mean, for me, it almost feels like it resonates with these sort of prophecies in that it suggests that something is happening that's just very unforeseen. I don't think we could have imagined 5 years ago that somebody could be a president and, advocate for, journalists being beat up or, calling women disgusting names or being an
Well,
open racist.
I don't think he says, I think he says there's a lot of fake news. And there has been a lot of fakeness and corruption all through governments and corporations and what's going on with the Me Too movement. A lot is coming to light now. And I'm a medium. So let me tell you, the January before Trump was elected in November, I was very concerned by what I was seeing in the level of anger and the way people were communicating. So I did a reading. I did a reading on him, and I discovered that he was being shown as like a lighthouse, with throwing out light to all these areas that have long gone unattended, and all these problems that for the past 40 years, we have found ourselves concerned about with economic issues and poverty and the disease and the abuse of women and children and entire cultures and religions in third world countries fighting each other. So, it's not been addressed to the point where we have resolution and solution. And in the reading, I saw him being able to illuminate many issues that had been overlooked for too long. Now, Trump is a change maker, and Obama promised to be that, and I voted for him, but he wasn't able to accomplish that. So we were in national debt, $10 trillion more, lots of problems by the time Trump got elected. And we all have to work together now to have to make the changes that are necessary for what you're suggesting in your book that has to happen. And I agree, where you tell us about projects and initiatives that give us reason to take action to protect our environment. And the first one you talk about is ocean acidification, if I'm pronouncing that correct.
Yeah,
Acidification.
well, I mean, just I think you and I seem to have a difference of opinion of Trump, on Trump. I mean, I also was really not a fan of Obama or Hillary Clinton, but I think it's hard to not see this as an unmitigated disaster. I mean, what he's just the environmental policies alone are horrendous. Most recently, the Trump advisors came out with a report where they're now admitting climate change is happening, and they're saying that it's going to be 7 degrees Fahrenheit warmer by 2100, which would literally be apocalyptic. But they're saying that because of that, there's no reason to accept Obama's fuel emissions standards because it really just doesn't even matter. So it's kind of like climate
Well,
nihilism, and I think a lot of his positions are very dark and very nihilistic, and he's really given an opportunity for racist elements, for for a lot of shadow to express
that
itself.
happened under Obama too. That happened, the division happened under Obama too. This,
And actually,
in politics, people use comments to get what they want or to scare or frighten people. We're past frightening people. We just want to get to the truth and solutions. And we don't need all this judgment which is going on. It's like when I was a kid and we would be in high school and you would want to vote for a child, for a president. Say there was a class president, right? So they got up there and they told you their agenda and what they were going to do. They didn't attack. They didn't talk badly about other people. And our politics have degenerated into that kind of behavior. And that's not spiritual. And it's not going to take us where we need to be to help all the problems that you're talking about in the book. I'd like to get to some of those. You talk about new approaches to agriculture, including vertical farm. Tell us about some of the facts of the things that have to happen according to bring about the solutions to deal with a lot of the problems that we have. And these problems didn't happen overnight. I would say the last 40 years have been leading to much of what we're seeing now in a lot of administrations and in a lot of different
Okay,
countries.
what I try to express in the book is, first of all, to come up with a model for how to
Yes.
approach system change. And I kind of look at it in terms of these three different areas that we have to address almost simultaneously. One is the simple, like technological infrastructure. So that's areas like energy, agriculture, industry. And yeah, I mean, we know every, climate scientist on the planet is telling us that we have to radically reduce CO2 by 5 or 10% annually, which requires a lot of changes in how we live. And one of the best ways to do that would be to shift from industrial farming to regenerative agriculture. So that would be, in a way, going back in time to organic farming, no-till farming, permaculture. We obviously have to make a rapid shift to renewable energy. Trump, I mean, as you seem to like so much, is pushing, hard on fossil fuel extraction, which is, causing even more CO2 to be released, where we should be making a systemic transition to renewable energy right now. In terms of industry, there would be a model of cradle-to-cradle manufacturing, where industries are kind of responsible for all the components of their products through their whole life cycle. Yeah, economically, I mean, one idea that we know is one way to get this done would be, taxing carbon. But there might also be other more, kind of profound ways to address it. Like, for instance, creating a currency that is connected to the health of ecosystems. So the way to make money is actually to improve the health of your ecosystems, like make the water cleaner, make the forests more biodiverse, and so on. Because unfortunately, as it is now, the profit that people make often comes from taking away, stripping from our natural systems.
Right. You also talked about blockchain, the technology behind Bitcoin, which is being talked about now, and a way to have global direct democracy or liquid democracy. Could you talk about that? It's a very
Yeah, sure.
new concept.
I mean, Bitcoin is a, is a very exciting development because it's a way to exchange value that doesn't require the intermediation of banks or central banks or whatever. So you do it as a peer-to-peer exchange. And once they figured out Bitcoin, which was built on something called the blockchain, which is like a distributed ledger, where every transaction is recorded in these blocks, so like chains on the blocks. You can always track back to see which transactions actually happened and who got what and so on.
So you think this
Then they
is
realized
really
that
going to happen? You think this is going to happen
what is really going to
soon,
happen.
where we'll be having this new type of a monetary system where?
Well, I mean, Bitcoin has already happened. I mean, people can go and buy Bitcoin. They can have, they can get them online. They can store them. And it's been going for about 11 years now, so there have been a lot of attempts to crack it, and so far it seems to be pretty impervious. But what's more interesting now are these other things that are being built on the blockchain that could be, as you said, like you could have, there's one called democracy.earth, and the idea is to create a new type of voting system. So at the moment, we've inherited this old political system from the late 18th century where we vote for candidates every 4 years. And they don't have much control over them, and they're backed by corporations. But the idea of the liquid democracy model, democracy.earth, would be that you could vote for people in different areas, like all of the time, continuously. So, for instance, if I know if I want somebody to, be my proxy on energy, I give them my vote on energy-related issues. But I don't have to wait 4 years if I find out that they're being kind of paid off by Exxon or something. I can take my vote the next minute and give it to somebody else.
Yeah,
So that's
but I
the
don't
kind of idea.
understand. So if you give them your vote, they get in and they can start to do their work because they have a skill that's necessary to be viable at that moment and not wait 4 years. Is it like a shifting, a constant shifting of leaders or talented people coming into the government who are necessary? and not to let someone stay there. Like in Congress, there are people there that are there for 40 years. They sit down in a chair and they never leave. And that's not innovative, and that's not, I don't, there are term limits for the president and other offices, so why would Congress be allowed to have that happen? So I think what you're saying is be more fluid in how we move our talent around and our gifted people so that they can come in and work when they're needed and called by. Now, if you'd have you vote for someone, who else would vote for this person?
Well, I mean, there's different things. What I was talking about is almost like a theoretical idea of what a future system could look, where we don't actually have the same type of government as we have now. We wouldn't have these, elected representatives every 4 to 6 years. It would be more like some more distributed voting system, whereas we would have the ability to put our vote into different areas. So then, let's say Elon Musk. Many people might feel that Elon Musk would be the right person to make decisions on energy issues. So maybe if he was part of liquid democracy, he would have, 150 million votes for energy. And then, but then if we felt that we didn't think that he was the best one, then we'd proxy our vote somewhere else. Similarly, I know that with the Democracy.Earth people have been running political candidates in Argentina, where essentially the candidates agree to follow the will of the people. So they respond to the voting system and how they vote for things, rather than what happens now is that we in a sense hire somebody to be our representative, but then we have no oversight over them once they're representing us. So if they start doing things that we don't like, we don't have a decision until the next election, which could be 4 years or
Well,
six
I
years
think
away.
that's a very interesting way of looking at it, and perhaps it's coming. I know there are going to be tremendous changes everywhere in every system, but it's not the political system, it's the economic right now, and the climate, and the dealing with diseases and the problems that we're having worldwide with wars within wars all over. So I think that's going to be dealt with probably first, and then perhaps the system will change. Sounds to me like there's some really good ideas there. So, it's funny, Daniel. Recently, a client of mine came in for an intuitive reading and an energy healing session, which is what I do. And he told me about the Burning Man in Black Rock City. And then I started to read your book and saw that you, as a journalist, had gone there in 2000. I was fascinated to learn about it, and I learned about it from your book. So please tell us something of that event that you went to, the people, the atmosphere, and your ultimate conclusions about what was going on there. Because these are people who want to make changes in the world, like you and I, changes that will bring us forward into higher consciousness and awareness of how more people can sustain themselves with a good, decent life. So tell us.
Well, I've actually been going to Burning Man for more than 15 years. So, yeah, I've had a lot of different experiences there. And yes, the first time I went was 2000. I was writing about it for Rolling Stone. And it was a part of my first book, Breaking Open the Head. And I was amazed when I discovered Burning Man because it was an incredibly robust kind of alternative culture based around creativity and the gift exchanges. So essentially, Burning Man is a little bit like an anarchist festival where there's 10 principles that everybody is supposed to follow when they're at the festival. And those principles include things that are like nobody's a spectator, everybody's actually a participant in the festival. Leave no trace, you don't leave any trash behind. It's a gift economy, so there's no money exchanged. Radical participation, so it really creates a strong community vibe,
It's
and people bring amazing creativity there.
it sounds like an exercise in social consciousness, which is what we need now. And it sounds great, but you wrote this, and I want to read this to our listeners. Daniel felt fury at our failure as a species to overcome the system, the military industrial complex, Wall Street, the corporate mega machine. This system was not only corrupt, creepy, and hypocritical, but was also destroying the biosphere and with it our shared human future. Waves of protests and rebellions, the Arab Spring, Black Lives Matter, Occupy Brexit, reveal the ire of the masses. We live in a post-colonial empire which uses violence, drone strikes, bombing raids, assassinations, military invasion, extraordinary rendition to impose its will on the world, as well as employing sneakier techniques like the ballooning debts that countries across Africa, South America, and Asia must pay their European and American overlords. The even worse problem is that our industrialized civilization has unleashed an ecological mega crisis. We are threatened with an imminent planetary cataclysm that could drive us to extinction. And there, in that quote, is what we're dealing with. You say it clear on. And there are many people working to come up with systems that will work better. I just hope we can get it all together without so much drama and confusion and judgment. We have to get away from that, and that's what I'm hoping. People will realize what you're saying in this book, the possibilities for what could happen, and the suggestions you offer for what we can do, the solutions, and that's what you're really interested in. Is that not correct?
Yeah, totally.
All right. So what would you like readers of How Soon Is Now to take away with them after reading this prophetic, I'm going to describe it now, prophetic, scientific, social, political, ethical, and moral study of human history and the choices available to us now? What would you like them to take away with them?
Well, I think I would love it if they would feel so inspired that they would start gathering together their communities and, creating a dialogue around, the crisis we're facing, which most people are still very much ignoring. Like, you know, most people don't know that we're losing 100 species a day or more. That
I thought it was 10 to 15. It's 100? Oh,
yeah.
My. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, most people don't know that oceans are 30% more acidic than they were 40 years ago because they absorb all the CO2. I mean, there's the media doesn't really give us the basic ecological literacy that we need right now, which really tells us about the magnitude of the problem. But then also people don't know about the possible solutions that include, cutting down consumption, pooling resources, growing our own food, using permaculture, transitioning to alternative energy systems. I mean, I have all sorts of friends who are now starting to create like off-the-grid communities to model these new systems. But the more people who are aware of this and the necessity of it, the faster the whole process can happen.
I know you mentioned one that I like very much in New Zealand. You talked about some people who went there and are setting up because you feel that'll be a really good place to be. If some other places don't bear vote as well, but
a lot of very wealthy people are moving to New Zealand because it's a very pristine place to be. When they're doing it because they fear, that we're heading towards disaster.
What you just said now is what I think our listeners have to think about. If our news, if our media, if our social media, if everything could be focused on these solutions and the ways to go, instead of so much fake news and opinion and judgment, we could get this show on the road. And it's time to get this show on the road. You agree with me there? It's time to do something. We need to all work together to be courageous and productive in order to right a lot of the wrongs. So I want to thank you, Daniel Pinchbeck, author of How Soon Is Now, for your interesting analysis of past, present, and future as leaders in the field of science, spirituality, social and economic and political structures seek answers and ways to triumph and change life for the better, no matter how challenging the events happening before us appear to be. To discover and understand what's at stake and to find ways to participate in this awakening process that's affecting all our world communities, and to purchase this truthful, effective dialogue of change, go to Amazon.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing from Within, we have been most fortunate to speak with Daniel Pinchbeck, a truly enduring and enterprising Vitruvian man who offers an overview of the many critical challenges facing our physical and spiritual worlds and the hopes and efforts of so many like him who work in alignment to spirit as evolution proceeds. We all have many choices to consider as the world appears to be turning on a dime, and we need to use our intelligence and also our heart-based energies or our soul energy to return to a merging of life as we have known it throughout eons of evolution and to embrace the possibilities of our soul nature to advance to a higher awareness of higher self and consciousness, as well as living in the physical world, so we can find cooperation rather than competition. It's like the saying the Marines have, in order to have a healthy life cycle, no man can be left behind. Daniel wrote, "When I was a child, I remember feeling certain that a great secret was waiting to be revealed to me. I felt the whole world trembling with this mystery that lurked behind the surface of ordinary reality. It was hidden under the sidewalks of New York City, within the windows of the apartment buildings that stared out at me like 10,000 unblinking eyes. It was whispered by the wind that blew teasingly through the leaves of the trees, causing ripples across the Hudson. I was sure this mystery waiting to unveil itself to me was the core of existence. When I found it, I knew my purpose and mission and became a whole being. I assumed all adults had passed through the portals of this unfathomable event. I believed this must be the secret subtext of their conversations, which otherwise seemed nonsensically dull and boring." I thought the same thing, Daniel. Daniel and I would have you know that the souls of each of you listening today have chosen to be on this planet at this crucial and important time in human history. Nothing is random, and the creative life force of love and compassion embraces you with hopes for choices that must be made by a collective consciousness of goodwill, prayers, and the creation of the next journey of life here on Earth. Please participate with joy, not fear. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing from Within, author of Life is No Coincidence, The Life and Afterlife Connection, and also The Living Spirit. I invite you to my website, cherylglick.com, to read about and listen to leaders in the metaphysical, scientific, educational, and medical fields, music and art, explore life in all its wondrous aspects. Shows may also be heard on webtalkradio.net and dreamvision7radio.com. Thank you.